Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Welcome in, everybody. Glad you're along with us here on Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today kicking off live from Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Jeff, start anywhere you like. There certainly wasn't a whole lot of dancing on the Jag side of things. Defensively, have you ever, can you remember a game in which the defense didn't force a punt, not only a punt, no turnovers, no turnovers on downs, that a team, until they chose to kneel down, scored on every single possession?
Yes, to score on 9 consecutive possessions to open a game and have 10 possessions overall where the 10th is a kneel down, I've never seen that.
I can't remember.
No, I've never seen that. And, you know, credit to the Patriots, and they got a great organization. They've got a great football team. You know, you can sit there and debate, you know, how they've gotten there and everything else with Deflategate, Spygate, et cetera. But the simple fact is they are a great football team. And the reason they're a great football team is because they have a great quarterback and they have a great coach. A coach that I think that prepares them to no end. They're ready for every situational football issue that would come up. Their quarterback is special. You know, and here's the thing. You know, if you look at all the quarterbacks that have played in the National Football League that have had the longevity of a Tom Brady, how many of them have ever played 16 years in the same system?
Right.
Very few.
Very few.
Very few.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of them
right.
have.
Right. You might argue that nobody ever played that many years in the same exact system.
Look at some of the modern era guys that have had longevity. Peyton Manning, no. Brett Favre, no. John Elway, no. Dan Marino, maybe. I mean, with Don Shula in there.
Right.
You know, but he didn't have the success that we're looking at with Tom Brady. I mean, he certainly had individual success, but not team success. You know, so I mean, this is something that's very unique. And, you know, and I think that a lot of times we take things that are current for granted, you know, and I certainly don't, because, you know, when I watch New England and I watch Tom Brady and I'm just throwing a lot of kudos out to Tom Brady, I'm appreciating greatness because that's what it is. I mean, this guy is a great player. It's a great organization. And I think anything that you do that would to be counter to that statement would be so wrong that I just don't understand how people could even, you know, because I got some criticism for giving credit to Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. How can you not give him credit?
Criticism in what regard? That you're not supposed to give a Jaguar
I don't know.
Credit?
I don't know. I don't get that. But, I mean, that's, you know, we're talking literally about greatness. And, look, when you see greatness and you have to recognize greatness and appreciate greatness because that's what they are.
That being said, now that you've watched the film, if you could have gone ahead and watched a film and traveled back in time and got in to the meeting rooms with the defense that week, what could you have coached them to do differently? I'm not blaming this on Bob Babbage. I'm just saying, what could have been done differently? What could the players have done to execute? Was there something that, I'm not saying would have won the game for the Jaguars, but made this a more respectable showing and at least get them off the field from time to time?
Well, I think first and foremost, they changed a little bit. I don't know the exact percentages, but, you know, this is typically a single high safety defense. You know, they're going to play aggressive on the outside with the corners. They're going to play them in press. They're going to have one safety back deep, an eighth guy up in the box, or to play some type of coverage to where he's helping out on the inside and they're leaving him on the outside all alone. We saw more cover two than what we have seen percentage-wise out of this defense, and I think a lot of it was due to the fact that they were concerned about the injuries that they had in the secondary and concerned about the big play. But I think that was the wrong approach, because in cover two, you typically do that because you have a lot of threats that are deep. And really, the New England Patriots don't have a lot of threats to threaten that part of the field.
Not on the outside.
No, they don't. You know, it's a possession type of game. It's a high percentage type of game with a quarterback who's going to take what he gives you. And he certainly took everything that they gave him. But the thing that was disappointing, that even though you play a different coverage, the awareness on some of the on the routes and the awareness on the personnel at times was not there. You know, Gronkowski, the 43-yarder that goes down the seam, Paul Posluszny's lined up right there. I mean, just, you know, he sets off and he sets out and he's covering blades of grass. I mean, Number 87 is arguably the greatest tight end to ever play the game if you just evaluate him 6 years into the National Football League, and you're going to drop into a zone that takes you 5 yards outside of him, and you're looking at him, but you're not on him. You know, you got to have more awareness than that. The play action that they had. The New England Patriots aren't a running football team. I think you always have to think pass first and run second when you play them, and they got drawn up into coverage. I showed these things last night on Jaguars All Access and on the film. You got to have more awareness for routes. You got to have more awareness for personnel. I don't know if the change in the usage of coverages impacted that. Did the injuries impact that? Sure. I mean, that's part of the game, though. You know, but it's it was a little disappointing in that they weren't able to impact and contest the balls more than what they did.
A quick answer on this, and we got to go to break. But my thought, I understand why you want to play coverage or what your thought process is going into the game. Tom Brady's so good against the blitz. Do you reach a point when you say, you know what? What we're doing is clearly not working. They're scoring on every possession. We have to take a chance. Maybe they're going to hit us for a quick one over the top, but we're going to give it up. We're giving it up anyway. I'm talking about bringing extra guys to pressure Brady. You wouldn't have done that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. When you look at Tom Brady, the numbers say that with pressure, facing pressure, his QBR goes up 30 points.
Right, but I mean, what you're already giving up a score on every single possession. Do you not reach a point where you say, clearly what we're doing is not working?
I think you say what we're doing is not working, but it doesn't necessarily mean we change it and bring pressure.
Okay.
I think you say, okay, well, let's change it maybe and go back to what we have typically done and get up in some faces and play single high coverage. And they continue to play some cover two. But bringing pressure, absolutely not. On Tom Brady, if you're going to bring pressure on him, he's going to make you look bad to make you look stupid. And that would have been a mistake.
All right, you can argue that. You can throw any adjective you want on how they looked defensively this weekend. But point taken, question answered. We'll take a bunch of calls today from folks, I'm sure, who have questions after you've watched the film at 641-1010. You can also text us on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll hear from Gus Bradley. I spoke at length yesterday about looking back at that game, and the 24-hour rule may be in effect for those guys, certainly not in effect for us, as we'll dissect what the Jags did in Week 3, and also what kind of chance you give them going up to Indianapolis this week against the Colts, because that's the one. If you win that, it's a big get-well game, because sure, the next couple coming up, Tampa and Houston, are games you should be in, and you know, it's all out there in front of you. The trick is you got to go up there and win that one. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. Tuesdays brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lay & Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jeff Lagerman's here. Fat Tony's here. I'm Mike Dempsey. This is Jaguars Today. We're live at EverBank. Your call's welcome at 641-1010 on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jeff Lagerman brings his unique perspective to Jaguars Today, Tuesdays during football season. Jeff Lagerman breaks down the film and shares his insights with you, courtesy of Roland Leash Plumbing on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Hey, glad you're with us on this Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony. That was a distinct change in tempo right there, right, with the music? A little ominous right there. Loggy is in the house. 641-1010 is the call-in number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. We'll get to there in just a moment. Coming up, forgot to give out the fan feedback question of the day. We needed something a little more positive today.
Okay. What you got?
Yesterday we asked who was to blame, who's most to blame. Today, complete 180, and we're asking folks, courtesy of the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, simply, what is your favorite thing about being a Jaguar fan? Right? Think positive, right?
Okay.
What is the thing that maybe it's just hanging with your buddies on game day, maybe it's tailgating, maybe it's, you know, that hope springs eternal every year, and you're going to dream about the postseason coming back around. Whatever it is, just share your thoughts with us today on that. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, LOGS56, and at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Well, I've got a couple quick ones here for you on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, starting with this one from the 904 area code. How come Rodgers and Brady can pick up a blitz and get rid of the ball so fast, and other quarterbacks, Bortles, and many, many more, but Alex Smith, for example, last night, simply can't and gets sacked or throws a pick or throws an incompletion? Does their brain, talking about Rodgers and Brady, just simply, or these other guys, just simply not process as fast? What is it? If we all can say, hey, you got to get rid of the ball quickly, here's what you need to look for, we can know what to look for, right? Why is it that these guys are so exceptional and you can't, certain guys just can't get anywhere past a certain point?
Well, I think when you look at Rodgers and Brady, I think they're different. I think Tom Brady, when the ball is snapped, he already knows what the blitz is, where the delinquency in the coverage is at, and he's delivering the ball. Whereas Aaron Rodgers versus the blitz, he doesn't know a lot of times at the snap, but he has the ability to extend the play with his athleticism to buy himself some time to find the open receiver. So he's a gifted athlete. Tom Brady has a gifted mind. You know, Blake Bortles doesn't have the experience. He's showing traits of having that athleticism to extend the play like an Aaron Rodgers or like a Ben Roethlisberger. But an Alex Smith, you know, some brains can't compute that fast. Some brains can't stay calm and decipher things. You know how always when athletes talk about how all of a sudden things sometimes get in slow motion, you know, to where things slow
sure,
down?
Absolutely.
You know, some athletes get into that. Some athletes have absolutely no chance of getting into that. And it's very special to find an athlete like Rodgers and like Brady that can deal with it in different ways, but at the same time have the same success when they do something like that. But, you know, when you're talking about young quarterbacks, you know, whether it be a Blake Bortles, a Teddy Bridgewater, a Ryan Mallett, I mean, you can't expect this to happen immediately and overnight. I mean, it takes time. I mean, if you look at Tom Brady had a really good football team when he was young. I mean, a really good football team. His team was able to overcome a lot of those things. Aaron Rodgers had a good football team around him when he was young. They had a good defense. In fact, I think if I remember correctly, it was one of the better defenses in the National Football League. Blake Bortles doesn't have that. He's got a developing team around him at the same time that he's developing. So to expect Blake Bortles to have the same success at this point that those guys are having is unrealistic. It's totally unrealistic. Now, in time, you hope that he gets to the point where things slow down in the moment for him and that the team gets better around him to where if he can't overcome things as an individual, then they can overcome things as a team. And then you hope you get to the point to where Blake Bortles can overcome things for the team without having a great team around him. But that takes time.
And in the case of Alex Smith, when you mentioned, you know, these guys are just so smart, talking about Brady in particular, Alex Smith is a smart, you know, by most measures, he scored a 40 on the Wunderlich. I'm not saying that I'm just using that as an example.
Did you ever meet,
can't take that and translate that to what it takes to be a quarterback.
Did you ever meet somebody, you know, and this is a question for both of you, who was incredibly smart? I'm talking SATs, knocking it out of the park, 1400.
No, you know, common sense.
High grade point. And can't walk and talk and chew gum at the same time.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, book smarts, football smarts, and all of that. It's all completely
right.
Very different.
My point was that Alex Smith is a smart guy.
Sure.
Right? And he is capable of processing information. It just, that doesn't mean he's going to be able to process this kind of information and do it in the speed that some of the
Here's
top
what
guys
I would
do.
Like to see. I would like to see Albert Einstein think and be able to compute equations with 320-pound men that are wanting to rip his head off and take a dump down his head. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what you kind of what it is. I mean, I'm not saying that football is rocket science, but I mean, that's the environment that they have to be able to think in, remain calm, and not only have things happen in their head, but then have things happen that are just second nature physically. And that's hard to get to that point. That's why I've always said this. Playing quarterback in the National Football League is the most difficult position to play in all of sports because it requires mental acuteness. It requires a physical ability. It requires an arm talent. It requires some things that you can't even explain. It's called it. And that's hard to find in the National Football League.
All right, a couple more here for you on the text line from the 904 area code. Please ask Logs, are we outmatched coaching-wise due to lack of experience, and are we lacking veteran players that teach the young guys, quote, how to be tough?
Well, I would agree with the last one. You know, as far as having players teach the young guys how to be tough in certain instances. Because yeah, I think that's the one thing I think that, you know, growing up in the National Football League, there's always guys that you have conversation with and guys that you kind of model yourself after and guys that you want to strive to be like. And with this rebuild, and this was the one criticism that I had from the very beginning, was that when they did the rebuild, it was a complete tear down without any building blocks kind of in place. They went young across the board. They tried to keep certain positions that, you know, had some age and experience, but I think across the board they weren't able to do that. You know, it's always better if you have a little bit of a mentor at each position to help the process grow. That's why you see a lot of coaches and organizations, when they go to the rebuild, they'll bring in the retreads that they had from previous successes somewhere else to help, you know, kind of install their system, to install their mindset. And it's always difficult to start from the ground level up, to completely flatten it, and then to expect to build something that's going to have success. And it takes time. It takes longer, I think, in some cases, to do it that way. You know, perfect example is that this past week, look, Marquise Lee. You know, Marquise Lee has, you know, a knee that's starting to give him some issues. You know, I would like to think that if you have a veteran that's on the team that's able to say, hey, Marquise, we're counting on you. You know, when you make this trip to New England, in your mind, you have to say, I'm playing. It's not a question mark. I don't know, and I'm not sure. It's I am playing. I will do whatever it takes for me to get on the field. And I think that was a really bad thing to happen for this football team, that the transaction had to take place because of the uncertainty surrounding Marquise Lee. You cut Leroy Reynolds so you can bring up Tony Washington on game day because you're unsure about Marquise Lee. As far as I'm concerned, I'm putting Marquise Lee on IR. And I'm telling them, you haven't proven to me anything. You haven't proven to me that you're reliable, that you're accountable to the team and your teammates. Next year, we'll try it again. And then next year is the last year that this scholarship is being offered. Because if you can't prove that you're accountable and reliable for this football team, we're going to find somebody else.
Devil's advocate. Mark Easley's like, I didn't try to get hurt, man. I got hurt. What am I supposed to do if I'm hurt and the training staff says, we don't want to send you back in the game? I'm playing devil's advocate here. What would your response be to that?
To Marquise saying
yeah,
that?
Yeah, let's say that was, I mean, that's an argument, or someone making that argument in
Mike,
his defense.
Mike, I don't care. If you make that trip, okay, and you practiced all week, you play. You play. Brandon Linder, hurt in practice on Wednesday, okay? Allen Robinson had his knee hurt in the first game, was on the injury report the following week, came out and had a monster game. Brandon Linder didn't have his best game, but he played okay, played well. I mean, that's the kind of guys you got to have at this level. You can't have a guy that's warming up on the sideline for an hour and talking to trainers and doctors about, can I go, I don't know. Well, look, your teammates are counting on you, man.
So what do you do in that instance? Like, Marquise did tell Mike DiRocco after the game that he told the training staff, I can play, put me back in. And they said no, they were going to hold him out for, at that point, I guess they were already down big and they didn't want it to turn into a longer-term deal.
I don't care.
Okay, well, I understand. I'm not arguing with you, but when you say you don't care, what should he have done? Just injected himself back in the huddle regardless?
If a player says, I'm good, he's going in.
So you don't. Then you don't think he said he's good, or what? I mean, or you? I mean, what?
I don't know. I don't know what he said. I don't care what he said. I just know one thing: when a player tells a doctor and a trainer, "I'm good to go," puts his helmet on, and just walks over to the coach and says, "I'm ready to go."
Okay,
he goes.
All right.
And it was pretty clear he was a big part of the offensive game plan too. All the misdirection stuff they were running—that was with Marquise Lee in mind. And as soon as he left the game, that was out the door.
I'm not pinning anything on Marquise Lee. I'm just talking about just this. Okay, I'm not talking about the game plan went south because of Marquise Lee. The offensive performance went south because of Marquise Lee. There were so many things that were involved. You know, Blake Bortles talked all week long, and he was asked about what's going to be like facing Tom Brady, and Blake Bortles made the comment, and this is true, that I'm not facing Tom Brady. Well, you're not, but you are. because you're facing an opponent that's going to score up points, score a lot of points, and it changes the way you're going to be able to play offense. So in reality, you are facing Tom Brady.
But doesn't every quarterback answer that question that way?
Well, he has to think that. But in the back of his mind, he also has to understand and prepare himself mentally that, look, this is facing Tom Brady. The game plan may change. We want to run the football, keep balance, control the time of possession, and find a way to score points. But at some point in that game, because of who they are and who he is, Tom Brady, that could change. And you got to have that reality in your mindset. And offensively, they didn't do anything offensively to have balance. They didn't make plays to be able to have a little continuity in their game plan. First half, you throw the pick. You have the drop by Corey Grant in the end zone in a one-on-one matchup against the linebacker Dante Hightower that was exactly what you wanted to. Blake Bortles throws that ball on the money. Make the catch. You know what I mean? So there were opportunities that were lost on offense. You know, it's not all on the defense.
All right, this one, last one, and we'll take a break. We'll come back and hear a little bit from Gus Bradley. This is in response to you saying, in terms of putting pressure on, you take a defense that looks, I forget the exact phrase, you looks bad and takes them from looking bad to making them look stupid. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, this was in response to that on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. So, giving up 51 points, New England punter eating donuts on the bench and allowing
Dunkin' Donuts, by the way, and allowing
35 first downs didn't make this defense look stupid. Are they just bad? I mean, you know, the fan there saying, boy, if that's not looking stupid, then I'd hate to see looking stupid.
What I mean by looking stupid is that trying to do something that has no chance. I mean, that's a conscious decision. You can look stupid when you do something that is destined to fail. Looking bad is whether you let somebody hang 21 on you in the last 5 minutes of a game, letting them hang 51 on you in the course of the game. But stupid is a different category in my mind.
Understood. I think there are Jag fans out there that would say whatever they were doing allowed them
Jaguar
to score
fans,
on every possession.
And I understand, look, they can put whatever term they want on it. But my definition of stupid and bad are in two different worlds.
Okay, I guess they're just saying, based on your definition, they felt after – I mean, let's say maybe the sixth consecutive score, maybe what they were doing was destined to fail. That's, I guess, what their point of view that they're trying to express is. We got to take a break. Come back with your calls. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. If you got any questions for Logs about the Jags' performance, we'll get into what the tape showed on Blake Bortles' performance this week. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley as he addressed the media yesterday with a day to reflect on the Jaguars' 51-17 loss to the New England Patriots. With Jeff Loggeman, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today, live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
This is of Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, Jaguars Today here live at Everbank. Tony, we're just looking at some advanced statistics. This is why, you know, I like advanced statistics, but for the crowd out there that goes, you know, it's a bunch of hooey, and all I need is the eyeball test. This is one in their column. Because Pro Football Focus graded Aaron Rodgers with what last night?
A negative 2.3.
I'm sorry. You said a negative 2.3.
That's what they said.
A negative 2.3. Should he have thrown for 334 yards instead of 333? Or maybe 6 touchdowns instead of 5? Maybe a couple of interceptions would have helped. What?
I don't know. 24 of 35 for 333 yards and 5 touchdowns.
11 incompletions? Aaron Rodgers, you're terrible. What is the criteria
that he can end up
with a negative score with that game last night?
All I know is that, look, I had Aaron Rodgers in our fantasy picks
from
pregame.
By the way, do you want that? I tallied it up. Do you want the total now?
You don't
wait till Sunday?
Because you know what? I finally said, you know what? Okay, I'm tired of being the whipping boy. I'm going to get serious about it. So this week I actually did a little background.
You got serious about it. You took Julio right out of the gates, and we left you Aaron Rodgers, but you obviously wisely chose him as well. Let me give you a for instance. Last week, the top score of the week, Tony had 58 points. That's okay. Pretty typical, you know, like if you have three guys, so if you get 20 out of each, that's a pretty good week. Coming into week three, I had 115 over 2 weeks, period.
Okay. Okay.
That was the best out of all of us who pick on Sundays. This week, you had Jamaal Charles last night. He managed to eke out 30 points for you on the strength of three rushing touchdowns.
Nice.
That's not so bad. Not quite as good as Aaron Rodgers, though, with his negative 2-point whatever rating on Pro Football Focus.
2.3.
Yes. Fantasy liked him to the tune of 36 points.
Nice.
Of course, he wasn't your high score this week. Thanks
no,
to
I
Julio
that
Jones.
Was Julio Jones.
You're learning, Jeff. 40 for Julio. You scored 106, which is almost as much as anybody had after 2 weeks. The good thing is I had a little cushion on you coming into the week. Because, I mean, I had a decent week. I scored 64. That's pretty typical. This week, that was not going to get it done. In the night, there are too many guys going off at big time. This week, nobody took A.J. Green. A.J. Green.
Yeah, he had a monster game.
Had a monster game.
200 and something yards receiving.
A couple of touchdowns. Yep. I mean, just absolutely crazy. So congrats to Jeff Loggeman, who will be picking last on this Sunday's pregame show.
Good. It's nice to be last. Now, at the end of the year, it's the total points.
Total points for the whole season.
Okay,
doesn't
good.
Matter if you win the week or not. So you got plenty of time. You're right in the thick of things. Nice.
Good. Who's last?
Fortunately, it wasn't me, but I wasn't far behind. That would be your cohort in the booth, not named Frank.
Oof.
That'd be Tony. Tony got a 2 out of Marshawn Lynch. We said, Tony, you realize he's hurt.
I said, I don't care.
I told him that. He's going to play.
You understand he's questionable, right?
Right.
I gave him an out.
He did play to the tune of 2 points. And, you know, he had Matt Ryan, which wasn't terrible. He had Demaryius Thomas, which wasn't terrible.
He picked Demaryius Thomas after going, who's another receiver?
Yes, he did.
It's like you got the whole league. There's like two guys off the board. Who's another receiver?
JP had a nice week by JP standards, certainly. Yeah. But he had Andy Dalton with 36 and Marshall with 24. TJ Yeldon kept him from having a monster week, but he did solid. I was second worst this week. I had Luck, AP, and Antonio Brown and scored 64. Felt okay about it. You know?
Yeah, I'll give you a little suggestion after watching the Colts film.
He's getting tips now. Here he comes.
Yeah, don't pick Luck anytime soon.
No, trust me. I thought it was get right Sunday. Fortunately for me, some fourth quarter touchdowns got him near 20 for the week, so I'll live with that.
It's going to be a while before he gets right.
All right, let's hear from Gus Bradley. We get this, and we're going to go to the phones immediately after this cut. We get this question a lot about how come the Jags don't make adjustments. We see other coaches, you know, we get it a lot, and so you can hold your answer on this one. Let's hear what Gus had to say, because we always, you know, other teams are changing things. How come we come out, we score in the first half, we can't score in the second half, as has sometimes been the case, those kind of things. So we get asked a lot, why is this team so bad at making second half adjustments? So Gus addressed this. This is Gus on making second half adjustments. He says it's not what people think.
At halftime, you should make game adjustments, and there's an opportunity. It's not like what people think. It's a short period in time at halftime. So it's not like you can throw out a game plan and now let's go do this. But I think there's points of emphasis. There's coaching points. Hey, what are we seeing? Okay, be alert for this. This is how they're trying to attack us. Now, understand within our coverage principles, here's what we need to do, or certain things offensively. So, yeah, I think adjustments need to be made throughout the game and at halftime, and then you got to go execute them in the second half.
What are your thoughts on what he had to say first?
Well, I mean, he's accurate. I mean, it's not like a game plan changes completely, you know, and I think halftime adjustments, I think sometimes are kind of overstated. In-game adjustments are just as important, you know, whether it be, okay, they've got an injury. Now we've got a great matchup opportunity that we can maybe look at offensively. And the Patriots were able to do that. You remember when Peyton Thompson went in as a safety and then all of a sudden Tom Brady, who has been pretty much running a controlled passing attack throughout the game, Peyton Thompson goes in the game. What do? They throw it deep.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's an in-game adjustment. That was not a halftime adjustment by the New England Patriots. And the Jaguars make them. The issue is that they're not performing at a high enough level that you can see the adjustments have success, and you can therefore say, wow, that was a great adjustment.
Right. Well, you saw it last night with Aaron Rodgers. Kansas City, one of their corners went out, and immediately Rodgers went to Cobb, who the guy had the misfortune of lining up across from, and Cobb scored a touchdown on that play. You know,
when this team gets to the point where they start performing better, you will start to see halftime adjustments appear to have been made. And I think a lot of times, is, you know, people say, well, you know, let's start making, let's run this play or let's run that play. No, it's not a matter of let's run a new play. It's maybe redirecting the percentages towards another set of plays that are already in the game plan to take advantage of things that maybe they're doing defensively or things that they're doing offensively. You know, and I think that defensively they didn't make any adjustments, which they should have, you know, because you are what you are on defense. If you're a press man or a press zone coverage team, when you play Tom Brady, you need to be a press man or a press zone team. And adjustments to be made as far as, hey, look, this is how they're attacking our coverages. Be aware that this is the route combination that they're going to with our coverage. And so the adjustment itself is not a coverage, but it's more of an awareness statement, an awareness for the players that they can lean a specific way in a coverage. So it's not always time, all the time, to where it's an X's and O's or a change of a call completely. Sometimes it's an awareness thing against an opponent.
All right, let's get some phone calls in for the first time today. 641-1010, the phone in line if you'd like to get on board on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Let's start with Ron this morning on 1010XL. Hi, Ron.
Hey, guys. Love the show and love the comments that have been made. But I want to make a point, and I got a question for Jeff. Seems to me that we have become so used to losing. I don't understand that. I heard LeBron James this morning talk about how much he hated losing. I think the adjustments that need to be made between the ears. Where you go out there and you say, like Jeff said earlier with Marquise Lee, you're going to play. That's what you're here for. You're going to go out and play. So what does it take to get these guys to understand that losing is not an option? At the beginning of the season, you know, maybe I went out on a limb. I don't know. I picked the Jaguars to be 8-8, and I still think that's possible, but it starts this week. So my question to Jeff is this. Jeff, when you were in that uniform, how much did you hate losing? And I'll take it off the air.
I mean, everybody hates losing. I mean, I don't think that there's a player on this football team that enjoys losing any game. You know, and as far as changing the mindset, there's no doubt. I mean, I actually talked about that going all the way back after kind of in the second half of that Carolina Panthers game when we were doing the broadcast, and it was me and Frank and Tony. I said, you know, at some point they need to decide what they're going to be this year because of what we've seen today and what we've seen in the last 2 years does not determine who you're going to be now. It's a matter of making a conscious decision to not accept anything that is not excellence. And I think that mindset has to change. And is it changing? It's hard to say if it's changing or not. I mean, right now when you have, you know, a loss like you had against the New England Patriots, your first reaction is that it's not changing. But, you know, there are a lot of games left to be played. Let's see kind of how this plays out. And at some point, this team, players, need to grab it by the horns and say, this is our team. We determine the direction of where we're going and what we're going to be. And what we had last week and what we had in week one is not acceptable anymore. That's not who we are. And I think that the understanding is I think the mindset is different this year. I can't sit there and say, here's an example. Why? I just feel it. Now, I hope I'm right. And I can't say for sure that I'm right. But I hope I am right. And they've got a great opportunity this week against the Indianapolis Colts. Because the Indianapolis Colts are not a great football team. But there's something that I feel with this football team after that New England Patriots game. It's something that I felt against after the Carolina Panthers game. That it was in the last 2 years when you would go into a locker room or be on the plane ride home from a game like that, it was almost an acceptance. And I don't say an acceptance that was okay, but it was like it's an acceptance of this is the process that we have to go through to get to where we're good. And now it's different. And I just, like I said, I can't put my finger on it, but something feels different that this team knows that they're capable of more and capable of being something good. And you can feel it with the head coach, you can feel it with the players, and you can feel it in the locker room. I hope I'm right. I hope I'm right, and we're going to learn more about that this week and the weeks to come.
Let's get one more in before we break. Austin, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Just wanted to ask, on this offensive coordinator, pulling his stats from every job he's had as an offensive coordinator, his record is 40-84 as the OC. What kind of expectations do you have when that's what you hire?
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. What teams did he coach and who was his quarterbacks?
I don't know if he's there.
I'm here. No, I'm here. Yeah. The teams were St. Louis. None of the teams really made an impact. I think his best season was a 10-6.
Now, I'm not talking about records. No.
Right.
Tell me what teams he coached and who was his quarterback.
He coached Tampa Bay.
I don't know if he knows who all the quarterbacks are.
My point is that success on offense with an offensive coordinator is based so much on what type of quarterback you are coaching. Okay? Who's the quarterback? You go to the Hall of Fame. Name me one Hall of Fame coach that doesn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Joe Gibbs?
There's one. There you go. Three different quarterbacks.
The only one. Okay? The only one. You know, and so before everybody gets on this, okay, Greg Olsen needs to go, and Greg Olsen is a bad offensive coordinator. Okay, Greg Olsen has a very, very good mind. Great quarterbacks can make offenses work. You know, and until we have a quarterback in Jacksonville that can perform at a high level, then I don't care if you have a Hall of Fame offensive coordinator. Doesn't matter. If you have the man pulling the trigger, you will have a great coach. That's the way it works. That's the way it works. You know, it goes back to the old thing. It's not the X's and O's. It's the Jimmies and the Joes. Well, yeah, it's the Jimmies and the Joes, but it's the Joe playing quarterback.
You've expressed this opinion before. You think Greg Olsen is very highly regarded around the national. A lot of Absolutely respect for him around
is.
The National Football
League. He runs a good offense. And look, if you look at the first couple games, look at some of the opportunities that they've had in the first week, the drops that they had that killed the drives. And then all of a sudden, and against the Miami Dolphins, wow, okay, didn't that look good? Against the New England Patriots, there were opportunities there, but the quarterback at times didn't perform, or the running game didn't perform to allow the offense to function as a whole. You know, it's too early to sit there and say the offensive coordinator is garbage and everywhere he's been has been junk. Let's not get carried away.
All right, coming back, we've got this state in football history, the Honda Drive around the NFL. More of your calls welcome at 641-1010. We'll hear more from Gus Bradley coming up as well. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date, September 29th, looking back in football history, it's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We go back to 1946. Los Angeles Rams played their first NFL game in L.A. as they made the move from Cleveland back in 46. In 1951, not NFL, but a couple of football-related instances here. The first live sporting event broadcast coast-to-coast was a college football game hitting Duke and Pitt. First game coast-to-coast was Duke and Pitt, and that was televised by NBC. CBS also on that same exact day broadcast the first American football game in color between the University of California and the University of Pennsylvania. 1985, Houston quarterback Warren Moon was sacked an NFL record-tying 12 times. Also in 1995, this is the day the O.J. Simpson trial got sent to the jury, and the word nullification quickly came into our consciousness. In 2002, Oakland wide receiver Jerry Rice, at the time, had 151 yards from scrimmage, bringing his total to 21,281. That passed Walter Payton as the all-time leader. Rice finishes as the all-time leader in his career, but Emmitt Smith in second place currently. Here's your top 10. Jerry Rice, Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Marshall Faulk, LaDainian Tomlinson, Barry Sanders, Marcus Allen, Curtis Martin, Thurman Thomas, and Tony Dorsett. Just outside the top 10, Terrell Owens. Nice showing by T.O. on that list as well. Famous birthdays for this date. Bum Phillips, father of Wade, coach of the Houston Oilers and the New Orleans Saints, born on this date in 1923, long since passed. And Ken Norton Jr., born on this date in 1966. This date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Maybe you have somebody in your life that snores a little too much. Maybe it's you. Get the SomniMed Custom Fit Snore Guard, 620-9225. One of the many services Dr. McCall offers. For a complete list of comprehensive care services, visit jamesjmccall.com. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers slouched their way to a victory last night, at least according to Pro Football Focus. 38-28 the final between Green Bay and Kansas City. The more notable thing to me, at least coming out of the game last night, the streak is over. It only took a little under 2 years for it to happen, but Kansas City has completed a touchdown pass to a wide receiver. It's Jeremy Maclin who got in last night in the middle of a huge game for him. It had been 18 games since Kansas City had completed a touchdown pass to a wide receiver. The streak ended last night, though. The Chicago Bears shipped off a couple pieces of their already underperforming defense yesterday. Jared Allen heading to Carolina in exchange for a conditional sixth-round pick. Chicago, notably, still going to pay $11.5 million of Allen's nearly $12.5 million salary this year. They also traded linebacker John Bostic to the Patriots in exchange for a sixth-round draft pick. The NFL will be looking into what Ed Hockley actually said to Cam Newton on Sunday. NFL Vice President of Officiating Dean Blandino said they were hoping to have an open mic close enough to the play so that they can hear what was actually said, and that they have had instances before where they discipline officials for something they have said to a player on the field. So we'll see how that all works out.
See if anything comes out of that. Speaking of Chicago, Big Cat Country did an article on Willie Young and Shea McClellan being possible. You know, if you think these guys can help the Jags, they're having a fire sale right now. They're not fitting in. They're not producing much with Chicago. Might be better fits in Jacksonville.
Who are the two guys?
Willie Young. Okay, had 10 sacks a couple of years ago, but they're using him as an outside linebacker in the 3-4.
Yeah, Shea McClellan's not very good.
Those were the two guys they mentioned. The reason I bring it up, though, is it gives me an easy transition to say congrats to Alfie. Alfie Crow, Big Cat Country, took down first place in the Mike Dempsey FanDuel League this week. FanDuel.com/Mike. Had to stop the scourge of Orangeman 96, who had finished first each of the first 2 weeks. He still came in third this week, so nice job by Alfie and everybody else who cashed this week at FanDuel. Let me talk to you about Blake Bortles, Jeff. You watch a film, you judge every snap, you have a better handle on it, I'm sure, than I do. But to my eye, I just thought Blake did not have a good game. There are some things you could point out, the throw to Corey Grant, maybe should have been a touchdown, things like that. The interception to me was mind-boggling, how bad the throw.
How bad ball.
I mean, he missed the mark by so much. There were some other ones that came out of his hand that reminded us of that. It reminded me of that first minicamp where we saw him. Just sort of like, whoa, you know, can he spin the ball or not? Overall, just your impressions of Blake Bortles' performance this week.
Not good enough. You know, I thought there were some of the decision making early on wasn't very good.
Can you give us an example of?
Yeah, well, you remember that early on in the game, he tried to force the ball to Allen Robinson a couple times. The one that was where he had the deep ball going to the boundary of the New England Patriots. They tried a double move with Allen Robinson, and you had the safety, McCourty, that came over and actually broke up the play.
Right.
And then you had another play to where Allen Robinson was running across a route. And it appeared that he was in man coverage, but it was actually like a double kind of coverage where you had a robber, which was McCourty, sitting in the middle, shallow middle. And then he was going to be basically tracking Allen Robinson, and Blake just didn't see it. You know, I mean, those things, I think, are the more he sees those things, the more that in the future he can pull back and reference maybe in his mind before he makes that decision. You know, remember, this is year two, you know, and you sit there and you say, well, hasn't he seen this before? Well, I think last year he saw some things and he couldn't tell you what the hell they were. You know, and I think now he's starting to see some things and goes, oh, that's what that was that I saw last year. So he has the ability to, I think, comprehend a little bit more this year. But the decision making was not great. The lack of a running game did not help. And then the score and the game conditions didn't dictate a lot of things for him. But I mean, some of the balls were misses.
How surprised were you that a team that gave up the most average yards per carry in the first couple of weeks in the New England Patriots. Yeah, he's able to shut down the run.
Yeah, but that's misconstrued because, I mean, a lot of those yardage and the yards per carry that they gave up were against a mobile quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. You know, if you actually evaluated it and said, okay, what's the average yards per carry given up by the opposing running backs against the New England Patriots, it would be more realistic to what we saw, I think, against the Jaguars. But Tyrod Taylor accounted for a lot of those yards.
But even like week one, D'Angelo Williams had 127 against him. Mm-hmm. You know, I know he's a good ball player, but I mean, this was supposed to be something that Jags want to be able to run the ball and run it even when you know they're going to be able to run it. So even by the standards that maybe the number was misleading, did they underperform in that regard?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, even though I'm not trying to make an excuse, I'm just trying to say that the reality is the Patriots are better than what the numbers said. But at the same token, the performance up front wasn't what you would expect. I thought that Mercedes Lewis needs to take his blocking up to a higher level. I thought that Zane Beatles did not play particularly well. I think that the injury to Brandon Linder impacted his ability and level of play. So, I mean, there was a lot of things. I thought T.J. Yeldon missed some cuts. I thought that he was hesitant at times to where he was looking for a cut instead of just hitting it. You know, so the responsibility goes a little bit on everybody in that particular instance. But also is that when you start to have it's weird. It's not weird. It's simple. When you have success in a passing game, it makes it easier to run the football. When you have success in the running game, you know, it's vice versa thing. Easier, more success running, easier to throw. More success throwing, easier to run. And then when you start to be able to put together drives and you have the ability to stick with that focus, then it's easier to have, you know, solid running game. Typically running games are 3 yard gain, 2 yard gain, 4 yard gain, 2 yard gain, 20 yard gain.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, you know, you got to hit a couple of them to kind of make the numbers look good. But, you know, you couldn't keep the focus on the running game. You never hit any big ones. New England did a great job. They did a great job.
Let's get Kevin up here next. 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board Jaguars today. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, gentlemen. How are you guys today?
Good. What's up?
Good. A quick question and a quick correction. You talked about Hall of Fame coaches without Hall of Fame quarterbacks. There's one other one from the same era, and that, of course, is Parcells. I think Phil Simms is one of those guys who is borderline. He seems to be there every year, but they never quite get that final push, regrettably. But anyway, but I think he was clearly a step above whatever Gibbs had in Washington. But here's my concern with Olsen as offensive coordinator, and I'll take this off the air once I ask. My concern with him is, look, the guy's had about 9 or 10 jobs since 2000, since he left Purdue. He had 2 or 3 years in Tampa Bay, which didn't really astound me by any stretch. That's my concern with the guy. He seems to be a one-and-done type guy every year. That much job hopping and not being able to build something concerns me. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, gentlemen. Thank you.
You've explained this many times.
I've explained it before.
But, you know, Kevin obviously hasn't heard that explanation, so if you would, one more time.
Well, first and foremost, I mean, some of the jobs that he took with the quarterbacks that he's worked with wasn't enabling him to keep a job for very long.
We just looked up the numbers to refresh ourselves on Josh Freeman. Josh Freeman can't get a job in the league, right? Under Greg Olsen, Josh Freeman looked like a rising star in Tampa. Now the guy can't hit the broadside of a barn. It's actually pretty amazing. But beyond that,
beyond who he was coaching, you know, Greg Olsen is married to a coach, and so a lot of the decisions that Greg has made in his career weren't based solely on what's best for Greg. A lot of those decisions were made what is best for Greg and his wife. You know, he's taken jobs sometimes to be close to where his wife, who's also a coach, is going to be working. So, you know, that's why.
What does she coach? I don't know.
I can't remember if it's track or saw. I think it's track.
Okay.
But I might be wrong in that. You know, that's the history with Greg. I mean, he's turned down a lot of really good job opportunities because of the Merrill situation, and you know,
that's his priority.
And, hey, that's there's nothing wrong with that.
We all make those choices,
you know.
So
don't fault
right.
him for that.
Kevin, we appreciate the call. We'll take a quick time out. There's more on the line. We'll get to you coming up. We'll hear a few more thoughts from Gus Bradley from his press conference yesterday, with a little time to digest the film himself. Tuesday is brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. With that, Tony, with Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
641-1010, 641-1010. That is the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line on this Tuesday, brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logan, and Fat Tony here with you. The question of the day, if you'd like to weigh in, we're trying to cheer you up, trying to make you think of good things about your fandom. What is your favorite thing about being a Jaguar fan? I had one person tweet me and say, that is absolutely the worst time to ask this question. To me, it's the best time. Think about it. Remind yourself, because there are great things, and you know you love certain aspects. And when they won last week, you probably were on top of the world. So it's not all doom and gloom. I know it probably has seemed like that. We're just trying to bring out the positivity.
The best thing right now to me,
yes,
is that they've got a game coming up this week.
Yeah, and get this last one out of your mind.
I mean, you know, it's an opportunity to take a step up. You know, I mean, the division's all knotted up at one win.
Win this game and dare to dream once again, right? You're in first place if you win this one, and you've got a game up on the Colts head to head.
This football team right now, they need to get healthy. I mean, the first couple weeks, you're making decisions based on who's active, based on who's available.
Right. Can they compete with Indy as banged up as they are right now?
I think even though they're banged up, I think they can compete with Indy. After watching Indianapolis the last two games that they played, I don't think there's any doubt that they can compete with Indianapolis. And like I said at the beginning, if they don't compete with Indy, I will be highly disappointed.
We'll find out coming up this Sunday. Gus Bradley talking yesterday at his Monday press conference. A couple quotes, and then we'll get to more of your phone calls and texts coming up. Gus on if he will change how he prepares and how he prepares his team after suffering that 51-17 loss.
No, I do look back at, like I said, I took a lot of the, you know, looked at and said I could have done some things better. I think, you know, I speak defensively looking at that game. Some of the things that we did, maybe for whatever reasons, our injury situation, you know, what we had to work with at that time and saying, okay, how can we put together a plan together that best gives us an opportunity to be our best? And, you know, now looking back at it, I think there's some areas that we could have been more aggressive in some of our coverage principles. And, you know, but, you know, I think those things. So not so much how we go about it, maybe just the philosophy.
And you mentioned that earlier about playing more press, get up on these guys, you know.
Because that's what they are.
Right. They're an underneath throwing team. And what the Jags want to be is
well, that,
is
that's
a
what the way you've,
team,
you've
right.
you know, the first 2 weeks, that's what you are. I mean, if that's who you are, then be who you are. You know, when they kind of played a little bit more cover two, you know, which the Jaguars were a very big cover two team going back to Mike Smith when he was the defensive coordinator. And I learned a lot about cover two because there's a lot of different variations of cover two that you can play. And Mike Smith, I think, is one of the best defensive minds in football and one of the great minds in football when it comes to playing cover two and the way you have success. And he always said that, look, when you play two, you have to be able to disrupt the routes to have cover two be successful. And you never saw a lot of disruption of the routes against the New England Patriots. And so that's kind of doing, you know, and what that goes back to is doing something that's not who you are. That's not what you're accustomed to doing. That's why I say you got to be who you are.
This one on the text line kind of goes along with what the question was to Gus. Whoever has a direct line to Gus, please ask him to stop telling us after all these losses that we will learn from this. What are we learning? How to lose worse each week. I will say that.
And that's just frustration.
It is frustration.
I mean,
there's
not really anything informative there.
There is frustration from the fans, and they hear that every week. We're going to learn from this. We're going to go watch it. And they say, look, okay, when does that learning translate into different results, I guess? And I understand that frustration.
Yeah, it's frustration. I get it. I mean, but, you know, if you're asking me when the frustration, you know, changes into results, I don't know the answer to that. We're going to find out. That's the beauty of this game.
Yeah, hopefully it starts this weekend
That's
against
right.
Indianapolis. It's certainly an opportunity for them to get this season righted this Sunday up in Indy. Gus was also asked yesterday, who are you defensively and as a football team?
Well, defensively, we're a team that would like to play aggressive technique, aggressive coverage on the perimeter, and use our length with our corners and try to utilize that strength of ours as much as possible. And on occasion, have some change up, but be aggressive and be bold in nature in our coverage principles. Apply pressure with our front four, and at times mix in some a fifth man pressure. You know, five or six man pressure when it calls for. Play good against the run, and on third down, that's where we become more aggressive. And that's what I'd say we are as a defense. As a team, who we are is we're going to be bold. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to take chances, but calculated decisions. And I think we want that personality as an offense, defense, and special teams to be aggressive. And aggressive doesn't mean on defense zero pressure or on offense, 10 shots in a row. It just means be aggressive, show faith in our players, and stand behind them. Similar last week and in this week.
What did you think about the call going for the fake punt down to 27? I agree with you.
But I don't think that I think two things happen. One, from more than likely, that's an automatic call. If you see the look, then you call it. Because what the Jaguars were trying to do is steal a possession, to take the ball out of Tom Brady's hands one time by via special teams. I totally am for that. But at that point in the game, at that area of the field, with the distance, what it wasn't smart, and you didn't have the look. Typically, on a play like that, the personal protector or the PP is the one who's responsible for saying, okay, we can run that. And the personal protector in that case is Corey Grant, a rookie running back. In the past, it's been Denard Robinson. Denard Robinson's got a little bit more experience. And it's a numbers game when you go for a fake punt. If you just draw a line down Carson Tinker's, right through his butt, and you divide the field in half and ignore who's back deep and you ignore who's at the gunners. But in that box area, you have three potential blockers on the right, and then you have three potential blockers on the left, guard, tackle, wing, and punt protection. And then you count the number of defenders on each side of that line. And you had, in that instance, four defenders on the right, four defenders on the left. Can you block four with three?
Not usually.
No, you cannot. So it shouldn't have been called. I don't know who made the call to say, okay, it's automatic, let's do it, roll with it. I don't know if that was Carson Tinker. I don't know if that was Grant. But it should not have been called because you had an unblocked punt defender make the tackle. And there was no way, even though Grant is fast, there's no way that play was going to work in that situation. What should have happened also, and I don't know if this didn't happen or not, or if it did, but as a coach staff in that situation, with the score with what it was and the distance with what it was, should have said, the automatic is not on. It does not apply here. To me, that was a mistake.
Let's go to the phones again.
Two ways.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have been on.
Shouldn't have been on.
The
coaching staff should have taken it off, and then Corey Grant or whoever it was responsible
shouldn't
for
calling
it shouldn't have called.
Right.
641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on. Ivan, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. My thought is we saw what Tom Brady did to that Bills defense that has first-round picks all over the place. We're trotting out Chris Smith, Josh Evans, that one Thompson guy, like, we got Nick Marshall. What did we expect? If you're getting mad about that, you're going to have bad blood pressure when you're old.
All right.
Great point. I mean, my expectations were not high, going against the Patriots.
But were they that low?
But they weren't that low.
Right.
There's a level. Okay, and my blood pressure's fine.
If you give up, I think if you give up 34 points or something like that, It was 51. It was a franchise record. Mm-hmm. And it was more beyond that. It was the never forcing them off the field
Sure. One
time. Not a single time.
If you turn the ball over, like you had two fumbles and a couple interceptions and the Patriots were able to put up 51,
Okay. Right, okay. But it was just methodically drive down. Right.
It was the way Arizona blew out San Francisco. They kept turning the ball over. It turns into a landslide. That game was just, we can't do anything to stop this. It was just frustrating to watch.
Now I think it was Ivan brought up Chris Smith. Now, I think Chris Smith is a player that, and I'm not trying to be critical of Chris Smith, but the reality is he's probably a practice squad type of player and a guy that wouldn't even be on this roster if you had everybody healthy.
Like you had Andre Branch, Dante Fowler.
But when he is out there, he gives you great effort. I appreciate that. But Ryan Davis, I think, is a good football player. He is an excellent inside rusher when they run their lightning package. I've been saying that I think he needs to get more snaps. I don't know how many snaps he had in that ball game. It couldn't have been over 20. But I think Chris Smith is taking reps away from Ryan Davis. Why? I mean, who's the better player? I'll take Ryan Davis.
I don't think anybody would argue with you on that.
Any day of the week.
Let's go to Brandon up next here at 641-1010. Good morning, Brandon. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing today? Thanks for taking the call, guys. I had two quick points I want to make that you can agree with me on it. One, I noticed in the game all day yesterday, even without the interception, Bortles would stare down a receiver. The Logan Ryan interception, he, I don't know who it was, but just stared him down the whole entire route. And point two, I would like to see Gus Bradley not go Dennis Green crazy in a post-game conference, but have a little fire and say, hey, guys, this is embarrassing. We don't play like this. Have a little fire in the postgame to kind of pump up the fans. I wanted to know what you guys thought were on those.
Well, let me say this about Gus. What he does in private and what he does at the podium, I'm sure, are not the same. And I think as a coach, as a player, you would always respect a coach that would rip your rear end in private and then be calm and collected at the podium.
Not try to embarrass you in public.
That's right. And so I don't know what Gus is saying to the players on an individual basis, so I'm not going to judge him because of what I see at the podium. Because maybe in private he's bringing guys and saying, talking to guys and saying, look, what we saw out of you is not acceptable, nor will we put up with that level of performance, or else we're going to find somebody else. I don't know what happens, but I appreciate a coach who is calm and collected at the podium, but at the same time also holds his players accountable, and I think that he does that. But I don't know that because I'm not in the room.
What about Blake getting off his primary target?
Did he stare some guys down? Sure he did. Sure he did. And I think that was part of the reason for his poor performance. You know, I mean, that's what makes Tom Brady who he is, and Blake Bortles is not even in the same stratosphere as Tom Brady. It takes time to get to the level of performance of Tom Brady. If you went back and you evaluated Tom Brady back in his rookie year, and I believe it was, 2000, and I'm sure you saw Tom Brady stare guys down. And I'm sure you saw that in 2001. It takes time to get to the point where you can use your eyes as a tool. Tom Brady was wonderful at it. And I showed this last night on Jaguars All Access. On the one 43-yard seam to Rob Gronkowski, he takes the snap and he takes his eyes and he looks left. Okay. And Telvin Smith is the linebacker to the left. And what he's doing with his eyes is drifting the linebacker into thinking that I'm throwing out to the left flat. And as soon as his plant foot hits the back of the drop, his head snaps back because he knows he's got Rob Gronkowski coming in a seam route drifting across the middle. So he looked left just to drift Telvin Smith or the safety out of there so that it would open it up for Rob Gronkowski. That takes time to get to that level as a quarterback. Another example, on the play action to where he hit, I'm going to look at my cheat sheet here, Keyshawn Martin on a little slant route, the play action, he never turns his head around until he's past the running back, Blunt. And because of that, the linebackers, they're sucked in, and he throws right over the top of them. I mean, it's, you know, those things take time, and Blake Bortles will develop all those tendencies. We saw him do some of that in the preseason, saw him do a little bit of that against the Miami Dolphins. But to be able to get it on a consistent basis, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. We talked about this last week, Mike, about how with a young team that you're expecting to get better, that I said it was going to be like the stock market, where you have ups and downs and ups and downs. but you want to see at the end of the year through 16 markers that you have on this chart, can you draw a straight ascending line going up? This is one of those weeks that we just went through to where that dot that goes on the graph is very low.
Hopefully at the bottom it's going to be.
That's right.
Right? I mean, and we'll see where it heads from here. All right, we're going to take a time out here, Jeff. We'll come back. We'll get some of the fan feedback spotlight. Got a few more calls on the line. And also, I want to get you to look ahead a little bit to a couple of keys if they are going to be able to hang with Indy and maybe pull the victory out and get to 2-2 this week. What are some of the things we'll be looking for that the Jags need to execute on in week 4 of the National Football League with Fat Tony, with Jeff Lagerman. I'm Mike Dempsey here with you Tuesdays, brought to you by the law offices of Kenny Lane Associates, Divorce Men Only. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, coming down the stretch here with Jeff Lagerman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today, we're trying to look on the positive side of things. What's your favorite thing about being a Jaguar fan? You can share that with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Got this one in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Jeff says, look, we don't need to compare Blake to Brady. Got it. I'm paraphrasing here. But how about comparing him to Carr, Mariota, and Tyrod Taylor, other young quarterbacks around the league? Is he making the same kind of progress that you're seeing from these other young QBs?
He's making progress. He's not making progress at the level that you want to see yet. You know, you compare him to Mariota. I watched Mariota for the first time yesterday on film. He impressed the heck out of me. Calm, cool, collected. But, you know, in Tennessee, stays committed to the running game. He makes good decisions. I think he's got a little bit more maturity beyond his years. But they try to limit his exposure, you know, whereas the Jaguars have had to lean on Blake in two different games a little bit more because of what the score differential was. So, Teddy Bridgewater, he's about the same. From watching Teddy Bridgewater.
Bridgewater didn't play well at all this week.
No.
But he's got a guy named Adrian Peterson.
That helps.
That's pretty
takes
good.
Takes the pressure off him. Tyrod Taylor is, I don't know if I'd call him a quarterback or if I'd call him an athlete. I mean, he's just, he doesn't read a defense. He can make plays when the play is broken and it becomes backyard football. You know, so as far as playing the quarterback position, even though Tyrod Taylor's rating is high, and it's actually very high right now, I would still take Blake Bortles because I think the playing the position long term, I'll take a guy like Blake Bortles over Tyrod Taylor.
What about compared to Carr and Mario? I mean, who right now? And I get it. It's only
a few
games into
Carr.
The year.
I haven't seen Carr yet this year, and I've seen Mariota. I mean, Mariota, I think, is a special player. He's got a great release. He's got accuracy. He seems very cool and calm, and he's got a great awareness about him. And what impressed me about Mariota is that, I mean, the first game, ignore that one because he threw, what, 16 times?
Right.
He had 3 touchdowns.
Four. Yeah.
Or 4. This past game, watching him, even though the Indianapolis Colts had come back and taken the lead after being down by 13, they came back and took the lead or whatever, and so the Colts ended up having an 8-point lead in that ball game. And Mariota took his offense and marched right down the field. It wasn't penalties. It wasn't anything that you know, the Indianapolis Colts defense did that where there were screw-ups. He read the defense. He made accurate throws. He was very sharp. And he took them down, and they scored a touchdown. They failed on the 2-point conversion. But the first play of the 2-point conversion, if the Colts defender doesn't interfere with his receiver,
he's
going to tie the game. I mean, it was a beautiful throw on a quick slant route, but the defender, you know, grabbed him. Tennessee lines back up again. Now it's, you know, at the one, and they run the ball, and it gets stuffed.
I at least appreciate the running. Was it I'm trying to think of his name. Antonio Andrews, is that who it was?
No, I think it was 36, whoever that is.
Regardless, you know, a lot of guys would just get tackled. He was looking to pitch. He's like, hey, look.
He lost like 20.
If I go, right, but if I go, who cares? Lose 80, because if I go down, the game's over. So I would have liked to have seen him, from his standpoint, just lob it towards the end zone, even if you get a penalty for an eligible man downfield.
Well, he actually thought about tossing it back to Mariota.
That's right. Thought better of that, and then he just kind of ran out of time and got tackled.
But Mariota impressed the heck out of me. I mean, watching that film, I was like, wow.
All right, let's get a couple calls in here before we get to the fan feedback spotlight. Ron, you are up next on Jaguars Today. Thank you for the call. What's up?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. What's going on?
What I want to talk about is the play that I didn't hear nobody talk about, and it was a very important play. Remember the overthrow in the end zone to Allen Hurns? It was late. It wasn't even thrown. It was like slung because the guy was running into the quarterback and he slung the ball. But I believe if he had threw it and he had threw it earlier, it would have been another touchdown. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, it was three times that Allen Hurns was targeted. And one was for a touchdown and one was for a first down in the overthrow. And I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about it.
Yeah, it was an overthrow. If I remember right, Blake Bortles had some pressure on that play, and so he kind of had to wing it. And slightly overthrown, Allen Hurns had maybe a half a step or step on two different defenders. There was room for Blake to be able to squeeze that ball in there, but to make that throw, it would have been one of those wild throws. But Allen Hurns also at that point in the game or later on in the game didn't even finish the game because I think that they were trying to hold him out because he had the thigh injury or whatever it was throughout the course of the week. And once the game kind of got out of hand, they were like, look, let's just kind of let him rest and get him ready for next week. But I mean, as far as I don't know what point you wanted me to make, was it about Allen Hurns or about Blake Bortles?
I think you're saying maybe Blake makes a quicker decision. So it sounded like to me, he makes quicker read on that, fires the ball earlier.
It goes back to what I was talking about with the more experience and the better he gets, the quicker the ball comes out, the quicker the identification of where the ball needs to go. And therefore, the more accurate his throws can be because his footwork will be prepared for the throws.
All right, last one on the phone in line today at 641-1010. Let's get Pat up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. I've been a little concerned whether or not the coaches, particularly Bradley, makes adjustments, in game. And a question was given to him at the meeting about his pass coverage, and he was saying initially, if I understood him correctly, that they were going to do more of a cover two and a softer coverage. They weren't going to be close man on man. And he said he regretted that he did that. Well, he had a half, and he was getting beat to death. Why didn't they make adjustments at the second half?
All right, thank you, Pat.
Well, I mean, that's a great question, and they should have made some adjustments to change the style at which they were playing.
Let me interject something, because, you know, we hear sometimes, hey, look, this is the game plan. You've got to work within the framework of the game plan, but if this is a team that, I mean, you may not have practiced it for this team this week, but you've practiced other, you know, coverages before.
Well, but the coverages that, you know, you're kind of referring to that, you know, that we wanted them to go back to, they practiced it still, and they still had it in the game plan. There's no doubt that they should have run a little bit more of that. But I don't want people thinking that they just were exclusively cover two throughout this game, and they didn't play what they have always played for a long period of time. That's not the case. They just should have played more of it. And I think what kind of, I don't want to say spooked them or scared them, but whatever the term is that would be proper here, they were concerned maybe about changing what they had game planned for because of the injuries that happened in the game. You know, Sergio Brown gets a calf, and all of a sudden, he's out. Josh Evans, he has a knee, he's out. And so now you have a nickel. An exclusive nickel that now has to play safety. So I think that there were, you know, when you play single high, there's a lot more adjustments for the safety position than there is at just playing cover two. So I think that they were concerned with the injuries that they had could they play what they wanted to play? So maybe that was part of the decision-making process or the lack of adjustments or the reason that they played so much cover two. I don't know. But I just know that what they did, it didn't work. Now, I'm not saying, and I don't think anybody ought to think for a minute, that if they came into this game and played what they have played historically, that they would have had great success. I still think, even if they had all of their secondary members, their starting unit, that they would have struggled at the with the Patriots because this is the high of a level that they're playing at. You know, so would they have played better? Sure, they would have played better. But would it have solved it completely and made it competitive? I don't know about that.
All right, this one on the text line, the question of the day, what's your favorite thing about being a Jag fan from the 904 area code? Best thing about being a Jag fan, things can't get worse. Can they, Tony?
Oh, they can get worse.
They can always get worse. You already won one game. There have been teams that have never won a game in a season, albeit rare, but that's small solace. What kind of feedback we get on this one, Tone?
We got Area Man, who said the respect and admiration of our peers in other NFL towns.
He says that very straight-faced, I'm sure.
From Duval Doom, hands down, my fellow fans in Bold City Brigade and Teal Street Hooligans. Jaguars Twitter is a force to be reckoned with. Circle up, boys and girls. From Eric, for me right now, it's tailgating and hanging with my friends. Just get better, and this will change. From Black Dog, as a fan, the Jags are my dog that I yell at and kick, and then he comes back and licks my hand. I love my dog. From Alvaro, I'm a masochist. I'm in love, therefore I am blind. From Clarence, getting to listen to Jaguars Today show every day. You're welcome, Clarence. From Demetrius, knowing I have a loyal family around me, folks just don't realize how difficult it is to be patient. And from Joey, thought about it all morning. I like the color teal. It's the best I could do. Hashtag maybe someday. They are not in a very happy mood this week, and understandably.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's, you know, it's, here's the thing: is if you don't have, you know, disappointment and anger and all the emotions, you know, you don't care about a football team. No. I mean, that's, you know, I get it. I mean, hey, look, you know, we care about the Jaguars, and we should. You know, we want them to see them do better. We all do.
Here's a sampling quickly on Facebook. Timothy said the crippling depression that it brings, one of his favorite things. Randy said the low expectations. Josh went with they always give me a great excuse to drink too much. And Daniel said,
well, don't ever use that.
Same as being a Cubs fan, always keep hope but expect to be disappointed. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Loggy, if they're not going to be disappointed, the Jags are to go into Indy and win two or three quick points that you need to see them succeed at this week.
Well, I think first and foremost you got to stop Frank Gore. I think Frank Gore has really become a focal point. They have had some issues up front.
They got him going this week.
And they're trying to take the pressure off of the front offensive line, protecting Andrew Luck by running the football, and Frank Gore is still a very capable back. The Jaguars did a great job against the Miami Dolphins at limiting their running game. They got to do the same thing against the Colts, and then once that happens, they've got some talent. Philip Dorsett, first-round pick. T.Y. Hilton, outstanding player. Dante Moncrief, another outstanding young player. I think he was like a third-round pick out of Mississippi last year. You know, they've got some weapons, but stop the running game, make them one-dimensional, and then when you get an opportunity at Andrew Luck, you better put your big boy pants on and wrap him up because he is not easy to bring down. I don't know how many sacks that I saw him escape or evade over the last two games, but it's a pile of them. You got to take advantage of an offensive line that's having problems. And I just wanted to bring up one point before we get off.
Sure.
You know, one of the positives that I saw in the secondary, the more I watch James Sample, the more I'm impressed with him. I think the Jaguars have a keeper, and I'm talking about a keeper. I'm talking about a starting caliber safety that's going to be an impact player. In the limited snaps that I'm seeing, he's productive. He's a sure tackler. And at some point, he may be your starting strong safety.
That's what I was going to ask you. Who's looking over their shoulder more right now, Cyprian or Sergio? Looks like Sip at the moment, right?
Well, I don't know about this year, but I'm saying long term.
Gotcha.
He may be your guy.
All right, that'll do it for Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. Loggy, what do you got coming up the rest of the week, sir?
Oh, boy. Film Room Friday, we're going to look at the fake punt and to talk about the decision there. We will also look at the illegal formation call and have a little explanation for that on Film Room Friday. We also have Gus Bradley show on Thursday night here on 1010XL 6 o'clock and then Jaguars Thursday at 7 o'clock. The outdoor show on Saturday morning, then Saturday night the Gus Bradley TV show on WJXT. It also repeats on Sunday morning and then the pregame show from Indianapolis and then the game broadcast right here on 1010XL.
You're busy this week and every week during
just a little
football season. He is Jeff Logman. Thanks, Logs. At Logs56 on Twitter. Tony, for you tonight, Fat Tuesdays with the Fat Tony Show.
Yeah, from 9 to 10, I'm going to apologize to Jacksonville and I'll get into the details of that a little bit later on
for
tonight.
For shame. I hope you're not apologizing for wearing that Vandy polo today.
Heck no.
I know you're not. All right. That'll do it for us. For Fat Tony, for Jeff Logan, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo!
That's great job!